Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
He's an epicure, an artist, a writer, a mixologist, a fan of Kerrygold butter, of course, and he dabbles in acting, directing, that sort of thing. Stanley Tucci, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Very good to speak to you. People of fine taste, the cognoscenti, if you will. They already have some of your books. All of them food related, I believe. This one is a little bit different. It has something extra, doesn't it?
I guess, yeah. This one is about the passage of time, I suppose. And through the prism of what one eats over a period of a year.
So what I ate in 1 year and related thoughts as well. So this year you're working on the film Conclave in Rome, and your main request is a well-stocked kitchen. Was that a surprise to them?
No, I don't think so. Not to Italians. No, I think they were pretty much okay with it. I just needed the staples to start, and then I go from there.
I was kind of surprised to read, as you describe it, the sad state of Italian film catering. You expect that shooting a film in Italy would have wonderful food on for every whim.
Yep, that's what you'd think. But Italians aren't, it's not, you know, Italians go, they make their food at home or they go to a restaurant. It's not, catering isn't like a thing. Yeah. You have to remember too, that a lot of Italian food is made kind of very quickly, right? So it's made with fresh ingredients and it's all made pretty quickly, with the exception of like a lasagna, or if you're going to do like a slow roast something. But other than that, it's made quickly and it's served quickly. And it's not the kind of food that sits around for a while.
You can't let it hang around, no.
No, you can't. If you let the pasta hang around, it just gets soggy and gross.
Yeah, yeah, that's a turnoff for sure. You're playing a cardinal in the film Conclave. When you put on the robes of a cardinal, does that, is there a certain power that comes to your mood, to your feeling?
Yeah, there is. It's really interesting. I mean, any costume like that, you know, whether it's a military uniform or or something that's you know, a religious garb, yeah, it changes. It changes you. There's no question.
So no one's going to give you soggy pasta if you're dressed like a cardinal, I presume, and you're on a film set in Italy.
Oh, I wouldn't allow it.
Another surprise for us, for such a foodie and epicure as yourself, you consider soup to be the greatest culinary invention.
Yeah, I do, because it's so simple. You know, you can make soup out of, like I said in the book, out of 2 or 222 ingredients. Yeah.
And everybody can cook soup.
Yeah. I mean, one would think. Yeah.
You would hope.
It's like water and something, you know?
But your description is almost spiritual, isn't it? You describe soup as life in a pot.
It is. It is, because you would take garlic and put it in a bunch of water and boil it up in garlic soup. You know, I mean, it is. It's like it's a thing that sustains you. You just need fire and water and a couple ingredients. That's it.
Well, I think you're speaking to Irish people, because stew is obviously very popular dish over here, lamb stew in particular. It's kind of Irish minestrone in a way, isn't it? The minestrone, the Italians will throw everything into it, and that's kind of what we do.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and that's, you know, I do it all the time at home. I make a minestrone at home, and sometimes I make it just a vegetable version. Sometimes you might put a little, you know, pancetta in it, or guanciale or something like that, to, you know, get some more protein or fat in there. Yeah, I just think it's the most beautiful thing, and you can have it all seasons, you know, like chilled soups in the summer, I mean, are delicious.
So soup is one surprise. And we're thinking, well, his favourite food ingredient must be kind of truffles or things like that. The humble egg is the perfect food for you as well.
The humble egg, it is. You can do so much with it. And as I said in the book, you know, I like them all different ways. If you think about how many different ways there are to cook an egg, it's kind of endless.
Particularly the omelette, I think, is your favorite, is it?
The omelette is one of my favorites, yes. And I'm not very good at making them, but I like to watch people make them. I was said to someone the other day that the person who makes an incredible omelette is Blake Lively, who makes the most beautiful omelette.
Is she also watching Jacques Pepin on YouTube making the omelette, as you recommend us to do?
She must have.
Because I'm delighted that he doesn't do the flourish of cracking an egg one-handed off the side of a pan or dish. He whacks it off a flat surface and then just sort of prizes it apart,
which
I thought was amateur. Yeah. But it gives us hope. It gives us all hope.
Gives us all hope, yeah.
And also, if I'm in my 80s and making omelets on YouTube like Jacques, I'm putting in fistfuls of salt as well, like he does.
You can yeah, exactly.
Now, you don't hold back when you find a bad meal in a restaurant.
No, I don't. Although I never name the restaurant in the book. I only name the places that I like. I'll talk about the places where the food was bad, but I won't. Will never mention the name. That's not. I don't think that's appropriate.
You won't trash talk a restaurant, but
I will in private. Yeah, but okay, not right, okay. not in the book. That would just be rude.
You're going to get a lot of people on your side on this issue, but saying a restaurant that serves a meal on an oversized, slightly concave, rectangular plate drives you mad.
Yeah, I just want a plate. It doesn't need to be like a sculptural thing. If I want sculpture, I'll go to a museum.
Yeah, very good. And you don't want to eat pasta off a sculpture. Very good.
There's
so much more than food in the story here. The reminder for you to live rears its head in this book again, because you write that the fear of cancer returning still being very present in your days.
Yeah, very much so. I think anyone who's gone through cancer, and, you know, I know quite a few people who have, you're always afraid that it's going to come back. And of course, depending on what your original diagnosis was, you either have a more likely chance of it coming back or a less likely chance of it coming back. But the fear is always there.
And death is on your mind, not just because of that, but because your father and your uncle actually designed headstones for graves at one point. So you have a morbid fascination.
Yeah, I am fascinated by it. And, you know, I see it as like a really beautiful thing. But we spent time in cemeteries because, you know, we were visiting the graves of, you know, family members who had passed away. But also the fact that my grandfather's business was making tombstones. And as you say, my father designed some of them, and as did my uncle. And they were really works of art. And so you know, there was this duality, which was, you know, it was incredibly sad and moving. And yet at the same time, they were really beautiful sculptural pieces.
And art is something you like to do as well as cooking.
Yes. Yeah, I do.
Is it painting mostly? You don't try sculpting, or do you?
A little bit of painting. Painting, drawing, just stuff on a smaller scale. But my hope is that in the next few years, I can start to do some sculpture on a larger scale before I get too old to be able to manipulate what I, you know, the pieces of wood and stone and metal.
You don't seem to grow old, is the thing from us watching anyway. But you do really talk about the passage of time, and as you say, because you're saying you've got to the age where you know what 20, 30 years is. And now that you've obviously born in New York, moved to London, was it 10 years ago?
Yeah, a little over 10 years ago, yeah.
Is that where you plan to spend those 20 or 30 years that you think you have left in that morbid chapter?
Yeah, I love London. I love living here. I love living in England. I feel very comfortable here. I feel in some ways more comfortable here than I did in America. I like the proximity to Europe. I love the history here. And I feel very comfortable here.
And of course, proximity to Ireland. And you've been over and back a few times here.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I really want to go again. We had such great times every time we go there. So I want to go back to Dublin again. The food there is incredible. And I want to go to Dingle again, where I wrote about it in the book. That was just, we have friends who have a house not far from there. I really want to go there again because I just think it's beautiful.
Yeah, and we know you're a fan of the butter here. Have you tried the other things we would claim to be original, like soda bread or
black? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love all that. I love that. And Irish stews and all that kind of stuff. I love it.
Black pudding. Have you tried black pudding, by the way?
I have had black pudding, yeah.
Very good. Okay, so there is nothing you haven't tried. You have a wonderful variation of famous friends. Colin Firth, obviously Irish people like Cillian Murphy and Yvonne McGuinness, Aidan Quinn. Harry Styles, that was one I didn't expect.
I don't think we expected it either. And it just happened. You know, we ended up sort of spending time in our neighborhood and then he'd come over to the house and we would hang out and then we just became friends.
And he's a voracious reader. Again, I didn't expect to learn more about Harry Styles than I knew from Stanley Tucci's book, A Year in Which You Eat.
Yeah, he's a real reader. You know, my wife, when she was talking to him, she's a literary agent, right? So, you know, she's, oh, you know, there's this book about blah, blah, blah. He goes, yeah, no, I know, I've read it. She said, basically, you know, all the books she mentioned he had read. I mean, he's an incredibly smart, interesting, lovely fella.
While we're on the subject of Irish people that you admire, you have the most astonishing tribute to our own national treasure, none other than Andrew Scott.
Oh, my God, he's so good. Well, I told you, and I wrote in the book, he's too good. It's upsetting.
You hate him.
I hate him because I love him so much.
My God, it's one of the killer lines that if you find out Andrew Scott can cook, you're hurling yourself into the River Thames. That's a bit much now, Stanley.
Not really. Not from my point of view.
Another person, obviously, to be loved, your son, is it Niccolo? I don't know how you will pronounce
Niccolo.
Niccolo.
Yeah.
His degree in politics, I believe, but he followed your dream for him, which is into food.
Yes, thank God he didn't become a politician.
Yes.
God, imagine those conversations, how boring. No, not really. I mean, he has a great interest in politics and, you know, certainly what's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. But his passion is cooking. In fact, last night he made, he just did a beef carpaccio with a bit of arugula, olive oil, salt, and parmigiano. It was probably the best beef, which sounds weird because he didn't even cook.
Yeah.
But he knew exactly how to season it and how to pound it out. Like, to watch him do it was really kind of cool.
When that comes together like that, you know you've got someone with talent and that they can do this again.
Oh, yeah. And he just served it on a big board as opposed to sort of having it on a plate and be all fancy. It was just flattened out on a board and it was just amazing.
And I love how you're still insisting on a regular, despite living in London, where it's rocket. Wild rocket.
Where it's rocket, yeah.
Now, I want to ask you one last thing, please, Stanley, because we all know what you look like. Slim, trim, perfect skin. How do you manage this when you talk about so much food and making martinis and things like that? How are you managing to look like you do?
Oh, it's genetics, I'll be honest.
Okay,
you know, a lot of it's genetics. But, you know, I exercise a lot. I exercise like 6 days a week.
Do you?
Okay. I don't eat a lot of shit, you know. I don't really snack, and I don't eat sugar. It never sat well with me, even as a kid. So I don't like sodas and all that kind of stuff. I don't go near it because it just upsets my stomach. So what's the point? But I have a very fast metabolism. As I said, the exercise really helps. But also, I think because I went through high dose radiation, that has a tendency to increase your metabolism.
Wow.
So besides curing my cancer, it helped keep me thin.
Amazing. What do you classify, by the way, as shit when you say you don't eat that?
Processed foods, you know, snacky things, you know, sweets, candy bars, soda, all that kind of stuff. I don't like it. I never liked it.
Stay away from it. You like it good and simple, and don't give this man a rectangular plate, whatever you do.
No, please don't.
What I Ate in 1 Year and Related Thoughts by Stanley Tucci. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Stanley. Have a lovely day.
Thank you. You too. Nice talking to you.
Bye-bye. Likewise. Thank you.